This is Heidi Taylor at Midwest Genealogy Center, recording Ted Sipko for his military service. Okay, Ted, go ahead and start.
Okay. Answer this question?
Yeah.
Okay. I served in the Marine Corps, joined in 1967, went to Vietnam in 67, 68, my first time. And then I went back in 1970. I was wounded twice. First time I was wounded, and in a major battle where we lost a lot of men. And the second time, in 1970, I stepped on a White Foster's booby trap and lost a leg.
Did you receive any medals for that?
Not. Well, I received two Purple Hearts, and I also received the Bronze Star with a V device for valor. Along with the Vietnamese Cross of Gallantry and numerous other awards that
wonderful,
I have.
Wonderful, wonderful.
So, the first battle when I was wounded, it was a battalion-sized operation, which was made up of three companies, approximately 600 men.
Did the battle have a name?
Yeah, it was called Manaluk Thrust.
Mm-hmm.
It happened in August 1968, I don't remember the exact date, but it was a battalion-sized operation, and we weren't sure what size the North Vietnamese soldiers were, the NVA.
Right.
Turned out it was a regiment that we were going against.
My.
So, and what happened is our company, Echo Company, was supposed to be the blocking force. Mm-hmm. There were two villages. The other two companies broke away from us and swung around. And as they were approaching that one back village, they came under heavy fire and then called us up the next morning and said, you're now the main assault group.
Wow. What was your full company's name?
Echo Company. Okay. Echo Company 27.
Okay.
We had roughly a little bit over 200 men. That's what the... counting the mortars, attachments, and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So what normally would happen was one platoon would stay behind to protect the captain and the mortar tubes and and the other stuff, and then direct choppers coming in to get wounded and dead out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we crossed over a little stream into the rice paddies and two platoons in line. And as we approached the village, we got within 20 yards of the village, and we were just massacred. It was an L-shaped ambush, and the only way to survive was get back into those rice paddies.
Wow.
Once we got back in the rice paddies and regrouped, within that first half hour, we lost 43 men.
My.
As we were going out to retrieve bodies, more guys were getting shot and killed. I was dragging a body back with a good friend of mine, and as he leaned over to see how much further to get into the rice paddies, he was shot between the eyes from a sniper. So I jumped up, started thinking I was going to get the sniper. Well, mm-hmm. I was wrong. The next thing I remember is my head snapping back.
Oh.
And then waking up in the rice paddy. Apparently the bullet went through the helmet and then ricocheted out. I was very, very lucky there.
Yeah.
That night...
So you had on one of the steel helmets?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That night, out of two platoons, there was only six of us left.
Out of 200?
No, there was... we had... totally, there was 49 people out of our company left.
Oh, my.
But that night on the battlefield, that was the two platoons that were actually doing the fighting, there was only six of us left. We were told to go into the village and get a body count. And as we crawled up to the tree line of the village, you could see him still in there. And we just opened up with whatever we had and took off running.
Wow.
But that day, it went on all day long. That day, we had... five artillery bases firing on them constantly. They'd only stop when the airstrikes would come in. And we have the Vietnamese Air Force and our Marine Phantom jets coming in, dropping napalm. You see the canisters flying over your head. You can feel the heat from the napalm. That's how close we were.
Oh, wow.
And what the NVA did is they were so fortified, they also had tunnels underground. So when the jets came in, they would go underground.
Oh.
And when the bombing stopped, they would come back out.
And they were able to replenish people
and
from them.
For us. Exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
So, and then eventually that next day, when we were going there, we leaved an army unit, and these guys looked like the walking dead. They were just drained of all their. One guy said to a buddy of mine, Joe, he said, "I'm glad you're here, and we're not."
Wow.
And at that point, he kind of figured we were in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because none of us knew what we were going to be faced with.
Right.
And
she didn't know how many more they were going to be sending
exactly.
in.
Exactly. And then finally, more Marines came in, other companies from different units, battalions came in, and we were able to get out of there.
Wow. So they completely got you out the next day?
Yeah. And so.
Wow.
But it was a battle that no one ever heard of.
Yeah.
And we lost a lot of Marines, good men. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
And my second time over there in 1970, I stepped on a White Foster's booby trap.
Okay, so I'm not sure what that consists of. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, White Foster's is like a jelly gasoline.
Oh.
And once it gets, it'll burn the hole through 5 inches of steel in a matter of seconds.
Oh.
And the only way to put that out is cutting off the oxygen supply. As long as there's oxygen, it'll keep burning. So Mike Corman had everyone dump the canteens out to make mud, and he was covering me with mud, and that would bake hard like a brick, and there was no oxygen getting to the White Phosphorus and put the White Phosphorus out. What I figured was I must have just caught the edge of it because it blew me off to the right, and only my left side was affected.
Oh, wow.
I was conscious the whole time, and I looked down. Talking to my corpsman and stuff like that, and I couldn't feel my leg.
Yeah.
But I could smell myself burning.
Oh, my.
And I asked him how my leg was. He said, "Oh, it's okay, no problem."
Right.
I should have known they lie all the time. I'm surprised they didn't tell me here to take 2 aspirin. But I remember somebody said, "You're going to put a tourniquet on." And he said, "No, he can't, because it would just burn up."
Right.
So there's a helicopter. So we're very fortunate. There's a helicopter going to pick up a South Vietnamese soldier that was wounded somewhere else. And he heard that there's a Marine down, so he came and got me.
Oh,
instead,
wow.
And got me to the hospital ship, the USS Sanctuary.
Okay.
And that's when I realized that on the helicopter, I see my, look down, I see my leg hanging on about that much skin just above my ankle.
Oh.
And so I knew I was going to lose my leg, but my life flashed in front of me, and it stopped when I was at the Philadelphia Naval Hospital. There was 2 double amputees racing down the hallway and almost ran me over. So I opened up my eyes, and I looked at the guy holding the upper part of my thigh, and I said, "Blink, legs come a dime a dozen." He just shook his head. So I had a positive attitude ever since.
So then, when they took you to the ship, how long were you on the ship before you got to Philadelphia?
Well, I didn't go to Philadelphia.
Okay.
I don't remember how long. It happened October 6, 1970.
Okay.
And I was in Texas at the Burns Center October 19th.
Okay.
I do know. Well, on the hospital ship, I was allowed to call home.
Okay.
I had talked to my older sister, but it was breaking
up.
How
old were you at the time?
I was 18.
Okay.
Got to talk to my older sister a little bit, and then we lost connection because there's a typhoon going on. They had orders to keep me under. Every 3 hours, give me a shot. Put me to sleep.
So you were sedated.
Exactly. And,
okay.
I remember waking up in the Air Force Hospital at Andrews Air Force Base in the Philippines. I remember waking up in Japan, an Army hospital, twice.
Oh, my.
Well, three times. The third time, I was begging the nurse not to give me the shot because I wasn't having any pain. I just wanted to stay awake.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I can't. I've got to give you the shot.
They were abusing her orders.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and then I remember landing at Fort Sam Houston, and a helicopter there, they put me on a helicopter and flew me to the hospital while everybody else was being put on buses. So they got me in to start working on me right away. And as the bus arrived, they were taking me into intensive care. In the intensive care, when the nurses brought this little boy over who was burned from hot water, pretty bad. And he came over to me and held my hand and said, Mister, you're going to be okay.
Aww.
So from that point,
so
I knew.
Your burns were what degree?
Third degree burns.
My
whole side, my chest, side, back.
And that was stomach. All from that chemical?
Yeah, and they had to cut a lot of muscle tissue out of my left leg around to my buttocks because of an infection that set in, staph infection.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
But I was there. I was home that Christmas.
Wow.
On crutches. I was completely skin grafted and home on crutches and stuff like that. But I had a lot of fun at that hospital.
Well, that's good that you remember having fun there.
Oh, yeah. There was this Army captain. Rank didn't mean nothing in Burns Center. And every morning he'd take me down to the Hubbard tanks to have them debride cut all the dead stuff and get the live nerve.
Oh, my.
And they say they give you a shot. I don't believe it.
Well, and that's why they kept you sedated.
And they say that the water's warm. They put you in that tent, that water's ice cold.
Oh.
If it feels like someone, they take a big block of ice and let it melt overnight.
So, not good.
That's how it feels on burns, on nerves.
Has the nerves, yeah.
So they have to cut all that dead skin off to get to live nerve to prep you for the skin grafts.
Right.
And what they do is that first they put pig skin on you.
Mm-hmm.
And that sucks out any infection. And once they get all the infection out, then they could take your skin and then
place it on
you and stuff.
Yeah.
So
that was way before they had the technology that we have today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. But those doctors and nurses did wonders and stuff.
Wow. Do you ever have any problems with it to this day?
I do. I do have post-traumatic stress.
That's to be expected.
But the thing is, it didn't hit me until after I retired.
Really?
Yeah, I worked as a service officer for VFW National Headquarters, helping other veterans get their entitlements.
Right.
So I had to help other veterans get through their PTSD, and I never had time for my own. So I didn't think about me having PTSD.
Right.
Well, about a year after I retired, all of a sudden, it came up and smacked me in the back of the head. And I pretty much locked myself away for a year.
Wow.
And then I went and started getting some therapy and stuff like that.
Right.
And I got hooked up with the...
So does the VA here in Kansas City, they provide that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got hooked up with a young psychologist, and she... I told her about this battle, and she made me relive it. Over and over and over again.
Until you can talk about it like you are with me now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Until I finally got it under control.
Mm-hmm.
And knock on wood, haven't had any problems.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So. That's wonderful. But so is there anything else you want to talk about?
No, it's just something that I think it should be part of history. People should know this. Because a lot of these battles aren't mentioned in the news or the media, and you'll never find them in a book. And a lot of
all there is just the documents from the military.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
have you been able to go back and actually look up the documents from these?
I've got my personnel records and stuff like that, and military personnel records and medical records and everything like that. Yes, I do have a copy of that. I also have the Marine Corps history book of our company.
Good.
And
Does that help to go through and look at it?
They downplayed the whole operation.
Oh, well, of course they did.
Because it was an embarrassment. Mm-hmm. We lost a lot of men. We shouldn't have lost that many men.
Right.
Well, our intelligence reports were always wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, but that happens.
Yep. Exactly.
I mean, it's to be expected, especially with that in that time frame.
Mm-hmm. But
I mean, you were dealing with old technology, old radios.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, there was a hospital ship off the coast.
And a helicopter close by.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Yeah, because that was a huge blessing for you to be able to get picked up.
I looked the Grim Reaper in the eye four times over in Vietnam and spit and said, I'm not ready.
That's right. It wasn't until your time to go.
Exactly, yeah.
And now you're here to be able to tell the stories and get the history out.
Yeah, but I don't regret it ever going and joining the Marine Corps. This young, crazy, wild kid. And it's funny how I joined.
How old were you when you joined?
17.
My
parents had to sign for it.
Yeah, because that's really, because when you said 69, I'm like, then you said 70 and you're 18. I was like, wow. So you were ready just to go in there. Where did you go to training at?
Parris Island, South Carolina.
Was it? Okay.
I'm from the East Coast, and there were five of us sitting in a bar in Staten Island that we used to go to. If you got your nose over the bar, you got served. It was 18 over there and 21 in New Jersey. We all had fake ID cards. And we're sitting over there, and the more we drank, the gunger we're going to get. We're all going to go Monday morning and join the Marine Corps.
Mm.
When Monday morning came by, I was the only one that showed up.
Wow.
Eventually, two others joined the Marine Corps, and a couple others got drafted.
Yeah, I mean, you're the hardest of the hard there, you know.
But and in this one battle, the Manlock Thrust, I found six guys that I thought were killed all these years, 6 years ago.
Oh, fantastic. Were you able to have a reunion?
We do a mini reunion every other year, and this year we've got a company reunion, and most of them are going to it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But these guys I thought were dead all along.
Right.
I got talked into joining the 1st Marine Corps Division Association. So I was on the computer. And I thought, let me look at my company's blog.
Mm-hmm.
And I seen this guy talking about my buddy Al Hassick, who was shot between the eyes. He was all over the front. And I said, if he knows Al, he must know me, because I didn't recognize his name, because we all had nicknames.
Oh, right.
So I emailed them. I said, hey, I might know you. Send me your phone number. I'll give you a call. So he sent me his phone number. I called him. And sure as heck, it was Tony Pilato. And I got pictures. We had to go to the Philippines to regroup and pick up new guys.
So it was like a staging area?
That was May of 68. The whole regiment, our regiment got pretty much beat up, so we had to go pick up new kids that were coming in from the basic training and stuff like that.
Right.
And we were sitting in the enlistment, the EM club. And we're sitting there, this small little table, three of us, Tony Pilato and Eldon Johnson from Iowa and myself. And we're not being waited on. So I see this waitress about four tables away, and I yelled to her that we wanted 30 slow gin fizzes. So we figured 10 each for the whole night, and because it was early. We're waiting and waiting and waiting, and nothing's coming. Finally, a different waitress come by and took her order. They bring out 60 slow gin fizzes. We have before pictures, all the double cherries, peace sign, these smiles, everything. And we have after pictures.
Oh, fun.
Barely keep our eyes open. It's all slitting, just hanging over. And there's only that much in my glass, the last glass. and Tony's had that much, and Elda had maybe a little bit more, less than that. And that was it, left the 60 slow gin fizzes.
Wow.
To this day, we can't figure out how we got up the hill to our Quonset hut without tearing our uniforms. The only thing I could figure is Tony was the more stocky guy.
Mm-hmm.
We put him in the middle, and Elda and I leaned like this, and we went up the hill. I don't know, but it was funny. Yeah, but I just wanted to tell my story and
that's great.
Make it part of history and stuff.
Yeah. Do you have, other than those few photos, do you have any more than that that you were able to get? I know that's a hard time to be getting photos.
You know, I had some photos, and I lost them all in the flood back in New Jersey.
Oh.
And Tony and them sent me some photos, but not with me in them and stuff.
Yeah.
And, it's great finding those guys.
Yeah.
And us getting together and just having a good time and stuff. And
that's great.
Enjoying life.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. All right. Well, if that's it for now, we'll stop this. And
thank you. I've got a magazine article that was done.